In Seattle recently, someone vandalized a synagogue, Temple Daherche Sinai on Capitol Hill. On an outside wall of the synagogue, somebody spray painted the words, "The Holocaust is fake history." And they wrote the letter S as a dollar sign. The rabbi at Temple Daherche Sinai is Daniel Wiener, and he's sitting next to me. Welcome, Rabbi.
Thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
First of all, what did those spray-painted words mean to you when you saw them?
You know, intellectually, unfortunately, we've been expecting this. It wasn't a surprise. But to actually see it in black and white was really viscerally a gut check. It was really disturbing and troubling and disappointing.
What do you mean you expected this?
With everything that's been going on over the last few months around the country, not only with other vulnerable populations, but particularly the Jewish community and all of these bomb threats that are now into the hundreds, many of us felt it was just a matter of time before these things would affect our community as well. But to actually see it in such a vicious and malicious kind of in all of its glory in that sense was immensely troubling, and I was a bit unprepared for that emotionally.
Hmm. The words that the spray painter used, that the Holocaust is fake history, did you think of fake news and the discussion we're having around Facebook and media and President Trump?
Oh, absolutely. When I saw that text, it seemed to me to be the work of someone who exercised some deliberation. There was, of course, Holocaust denial. There was the sense of the stereotypical connection of Jews with money.
Because of the dollar sign on the S.
Exactly. Yeah. But the fake history component, absolutely, I saw in that a meme that has been popularized by our president.
Have you ever tried to imagine in your mind who that spray painter is? Because doesn't it feel different if it's a neo-Nazi versus a teenage prankster versus a mentally ill person? Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I think there is some degree of a distinction that comes from that intentionality. But by the same token, the impact and the hurt that it engenders is makes it difficult to completely empathize or get inside the head of someone who would do this. There is a sense, though, that the writing was very meticulous and was highly symbolic. So this was more than a teenager just writing something derogatory about Jews. This required kind of multiple levels of understanding some of the tropes of white supremacy.
I understand somebody hung a bed sheet over the graffiti at first. The sheet said, "Love wins," and you had it taken down. Why?
I did. I actually was an email conversation with the person who put that up and expressed my deepest appreciation for his intention. However, I thought it was very important, particularly just for that one day on Friday, that the community understand that this is going on, that this is part of a larger concern that all of us should be struggling with in our nation. And I didn't want to just sweep this under the rug. I didn't want this just to be seen as the new normal or as just some kind of minor vandalism. I think it's important that people understand this is part of a larger pattern and that we have to appreciate that pattern and do what we can to resist it.
What did you tell your congregants the next day?
The next day, really two messages. One message was, certainly we are heartbroken about the fact that this happened. We assured our congregation that our existing security was substantial and that we would be looking at expanding that security so that they know that when they come to celebrate, to worship, to learn with us, that they're going to be safe and they're going to be okay. But the key thing that I wanted to share was, you know, we received over 1,000 expressions of support and solidarity from around the world, literally. And the universal message from all was that not only do we stand with you, but we want you to understand that this is not really how the world is, that the vast majority of people love you, that support you, support other vulnerable populations, and that the people who did this were a small, narrow, toxic minority. And so that perspective broadening was very helpful and comforting, and I shared that with the congregation.
We're talking with Rabbi Daniel Wiener at Temple Daherche Sinai, which was vandalized recently. And you say you got support from all over the world. Is this an internationally important incident? The sad thing is I can't tell anymore when an incident flies under the radar and when it really gets people's attention. Do you know what I mean? We just hear so much, right? Bomb threats, right? The evacuation on Mercer Island. And do you think that the country and the world is looking at Temple to Hersh Sinai and those words, that photo?
I think because it occurred within a larger context, both in terms of threats and attacks within this country, but also a larger context in terms of America's renewed image in the world as being not quite as welcoming, as being more tribal and discriminating and nationalistic than it had been before. I mean, I think it resonated and touched a nerve because of the larger context.
What was it like writing that sermon? I mean, you had to decide. I imagine you with your fingers poised above a keyboard, you know, deciding, well, I could characterize this different ways. What was that like for you?
You know, it wasn't. I had actually written a couple different messages and recorded some messages. There wasn't one sermon per se, but trying to find a way to embrace the reality and the troubling nature of it, but at the same time to understand that there's a redemptive component to this, that there was a constructive element to this, that we are a part of a larger, not just a majority within this nation, but a larger community of vulnerable populations and of faith communities that truly are willing to stand up and to resist this. And I think that's the key message, is this kind of anti-Semitism pre-existed the last few months, although there's been a significant uptick. I think there's a correlation, not a causation, to what's been going on in terms of leadership. But I mean, I think I wanted to be sure that we embrace the severity of it, but by the same token, we're able to rise above it and find a way to affirm relationships and bonds and to redouble our courage and our convictions to fight against it.
You talk about rising above these hateful incidents. You know, I noticed your Twitter handle is Rockin' Rabbi Danny, you know, and I've learned you're a huge Grateful Dead fan, and there's so many other things you want to be talking about and projecting. How do you do that? How do you think about all that?
You know, I think without being too much of a faith leader here, I think I embrace what the book of Ecclesiastes says, and that is that there is a time for everything. There is a time to celebrate and to have fun and to be lighter, and then there's a time when the need arises to have to confront a crisis, confront challenges such as those that we're facing now in this country.
So are we going to see you and other Jewish congregants and Jewish members of our local community being more visible with Muslims and immigrants and just people of all walks of life?
It will be a continuation of what's already existed. One of the great things, I use great kind of relatively, one of the great things to emerge also from this incident is the fact that it wasn't this incident that brought us together, that there have been some incredibly enduring and building relationships between the Jewish community and the Christian community, the Muslim community, all faith communities. And so we had an existing relationship upon which to draw support and sustenance from one another. It wasn't as if this is the thing that brought us together. For example, when the MAPS Mosque was defaced up in Redmond a few months ago, members of the Jewish community, really, and Jewish leaders were some of the first to extend ourselves and to be there for that community.
Yeah, that mosque ended up partnering with the Mormon church next door, and we had both of officials from both places in at our studio talking about it. You know, Rabbi, you told us that you said thwarting persecution is not a hook on which to hang your identity. What do you mean by that?
I think particularly for the Jewish community, we faced persecution throughout our history. To forge one's identity upon a notion of resisting those who are out to get us is, in essence, allowing our enemies and those who want to destroy us to define us. I mean, we have to be vigilant and we have to stand up when necessary, but the reason to be Jewish and the reason to cultivate one's connection to Jewish ideals and to the Jewish community should be proactive reasons, life-affirming reasons, not merely to thwart persecution. And I just think that's something I think that other vulnerable communities also struggle with, is how much to fight back, but also not wanting that to become the central dynamic in our existence and in our identity.
Is that a conversation you have with other minority groups these days?
Yeah, it's a growing conversation, but it's one that we've been having within the Jewish community for forever.
Sure. How different do you think it would feel if you were a rabbi in a much more Jewish city than Seattle is? You know, in New York, Miami, Philly, L.A. I mean, do you think about your identity, your place in the community, particularly in Seattle, where it's just not the same as some of these other places?
No. I think you're absolutely right that in Seattle, it is one has to be more actively engaged to be Jewish. One can't take it for granted as one might in New York City or other large metropolitan areas. And so there is a more acute sense of our distinctiveness from other populations and an acute sense that that we are a relatively small population within this community. And I think there are some ways in which we see ourselves and see ourselves as part of the larger community that emanate from that.
We've been talking about bigotry. What do you do about it? What do you want a listener to do about it?
I think the most important thing is to, to continue to be vigilant, to not allow the more dramatic or even the more mundane expressions of bigotry and prejudice to go unchallenged. I think it's critical that we support any kind of legislation that punishes hate crimes to the full extent of the law. And I think education and exposure is also really important. The ways in which more and more diverse communities can interact with one another, as in your previous story about having a meal with a Muslim, to actually have some real experiences and to learn about other cultures, the ways in which they're distinct and the ways in which they share common values with us. That kind of education is always one of the greatest remedies and antidotes to bigotry and to prejudice.
Rabbi Daniel Weber, Daniel Weiner from Temple to Hirsch Sinai on Capitol Hill. We're talking about vandalism at your synagogue and more. Do you ever get sick of this conversation? You ever just think, this is ridiculous? This is not what I want to wake up in the morning and even go on the radio and discuss.
You know, in some ways, we've been kind of in a golden age. We really haven't been experiencing it as intensively as we seem to have been experiencing in the last few months. Quite frankly, one of the most heartbreaking things for me is my parents and grandparents' generation experienced institutional, you know, and attitudinal anti-Semitism. I really didn't experience growing up, and many of my contemporaries didn't.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up in San Francisco.
Uh-huh.
But now my children and my children's generation are experiencing it in a way that's akin to what my parents and grandparents experienced. So that is incredibly disheartening.
Really? You think that's where we are? We are where your grandparents were in that sense?
I think we're moving in that direction. It may be coming from different sources, but I think if we do not get a handle on this, we are going to, in some ways, go back to the quote-unquote bad old days. I certainly hope that doesn't happen. I think there is time to turn this around. But I do feel a sense of intense disappointment that what for me seemed like a moral trajectory and evolution toward greater understanding and greater acceptance seems to have taken a regressive U-turn over the past few months.
Yeah, that's a bigger picture, isn't it? A lot of people are thinking about a moral trajectory, as you said, that maybe they took for granted.
Absolutely.
So this, finally, this vandalism at your synagogue is being investigated now, investigated as a hate crime, but we'll wait and see what comes of the criminal look into this. But we've been talking with Rabbi Daniel Weiner about not just vandalism, but hopefully about more, hopefully about our hopes, our better selves. And we hope you can come in and talk about bigger ideals next time we meet.
Very positive and constructive ones, I hope.
Indeed. You're listening to KUOW 94.9 Seattle News and Information. Daniel Weiner, can we go out on some Grateful Dead?
Let's do
it. Lighten it up a little
Let's
bit. You've been to how many concerts?
In the 150.
In the hundreds. Okay, how about some music? Thanks, Rabbi.
Thank you.